Well, hello there and welcome. My name is Priscilla, and I just want to invite you to pull up a chair, get relaxed and comfortable, grab a cup of your favorite, you know, whatever you like to have, latte, coffee, and just kind of snuggle up with us for a conversation. This is going to be an important one today. You know, we try to bring you interviews with people who have interesting stories to tell, things that will educate you, inspire you, inform you. I think this one will be very challenging to you and informative as well about a topic that really is at the top of everybody's minds. It's at the forefront of our minds culturally and for many of us personally as well in our families. Certainly politically, it is the issue of abortion. We're going to tackle it from a different perspective though here for part one of the program. We're going to be talking to a woman who really should not be sitting on the couch with me today in this interview because she was a baby whose mother tried to abort her, but it didn't quite turn out the way mom planned. And so she's here to talk with us today. You're going to want to stay tuned because you're not going to want to miss this. You know, there are many different things that maybe you've heard, stories you've heard told, things that have happened in people's lives, and you've kind of wondered, because it hasn't been your experience, you've wondered, what is it like? What is the experience like, or what effect has it had on your life? I'm excited about our next guest because she is really giving a voice to the voiceless. There's a story she can tell that very few people that we know of can actually give words to and give voice to. So I'm excited about her and her story, her testimony that she's going to share with all of us today. I'm so glad you stayed tuned because you're going to want to meet Melissa Oden. Would you please welcome her to the program today? Hi, Melissa.
Thank you. How
are you? I'm glad you're here. Have a seat, get comfortable. We do want to talk to you about your story because you have a unique one. It's very unique, and you actually say that you have found, you've connected with other people now that you know have this same story. So I don't want to give all the details away. You tell us what your testimony and story is.
Yeah, you know, the short version is that 38 years ago, my biological mother, as a college student, was forced to have an abortion. The type of abortion procedure she underwent that was forced upon her was very common back in the 1970s. It was called a saline infusion abortion. And the intent...
Could you describe that?
Yeah. The intent of the procedure was to scald the child to death from the outside in. And so if people actually looked it up and read more about it on the internet, they would read about how this toxic salt solution was delivered, that toxic salt solution, the saline. It was delivered into the amniotic fluid surrounding me in the womb, and literally the intent of it was to scald me to death from the outside in. Children like me are called the red-skinned or candy-appled babies because that toxic salt solution would turn the skin bright red as it peeled it away and moved internally into the organs. You know, typically the procedure lasted about 72 hours. The child soaked in it until their life was effectively snuffed out, and then premature labor was induced with the intent of a deceased child being delivered. Looking through my medical records, what I know is that I actually didn't soak in that toxic salt solution for just 3 days. My medical records indicate that I soaked in it for five. Hmm. 2 days longer than what I was even meant to by those medical standards.
And how is it that you survived?
By the grace of God alone. Mm-hmm. You know, medical professionals have pored over my file, and they've just said there is no medical reason why anybody like me exists in the world. Mm-hmm. If a drop of that would have touched me, mm-hmm. I would have been scalded to death.
Now, your mother was at the 7-month gestation time frame, right?
She thought she was less than 5 months pregnant with me. And what I know now is that she actually hid her pregnancy for almost 5 months. Hoping to protect me. She knew that if her family found out that she was pregnant as an unwed college student, you know, she knew them well enough to know what they were probably going to do. Mm-hmm. And her worst fears...
Your grandparents.
Yeah. Her worst fears were realized when they found out that she was pregnant with me. And it was my own grandmother, my birth mother's mother, who was a prominent nurse in the community. You know, I want to believe she knew a lot about the scientific basis for when life begins. But she also knew how to make a secret forced abortion take place. And so my birth mother thought she was less than 5 months pregnant when the abortion was forced upon her. But the fact that I was able to live and I weighed a little less than 3 pounds, I was 2 pounds, 14 ounces when I survived.
Were you born after that 5 day period or did you stay in the, okay.
I was. So, you know, here I soaked in that toxic salt solution and, you know, my birth mother, I think it was just as horrific for her as it was for me because, you know, I fought for my life in the womb, but she was fighting for me. She tried to save me. And to know that she probably spent those 5 days in absolute agony, you know, knowing that her child was going to lose their life. And so on that fifth day, her premature labor was induced with me. You know, all of these things were routine. But of course, what happened next was anything but. It didn't take them long after I was delivered at a hospital to realize that the abortion had not succeeded in ending my life.
Wow. And there's no medical explanation as to why.
No medical explanation.
We like to call that a miracle.
Amen.
We like to call that a miracle.
I agree.
So here you are, this baby that now grandma sees and mom sees is very much alive. But were you affected by the saline that you've been soaking in for 5 days?
You know, there's a couple of caveats. It's such an interesting story. You know, I spent years of my life really piecing together everything that happened back then. And I was told over the years that when I was delivered, it was the abortionist who delivered me. And when he looked upon my live birth, demanded that I be left to die there at the hospital. You know, as terrible as it is to hear something like that, the reality is much worse. Because the reality is that it wasn't the abortionist who made that demand about my life. It was my grandmother.
Was it?
She delivered me in the final step of the abortion procedure. And looking upon the birth of her firstborn grandchild, still demanded that I be left to die.
When you find that out, how old were you when you found that out?
Just a couple of years ago. Okay. That is a pretty recent
development. So you're 30...
I'm 38.
You're 36 then when you find this out. What does it do to you at 36? Because I have a friend who just found out she was adopted. That was her discovery. She thought her family was her biological family. Then she found out, close to 40, that she was adopted. And there was a whole world of internal angst that sort of begins to take place when you feel displaced from all the people that you thought were your people. So if you find out, my grandmother is actually the one that wanted me gone and wanted me dead, did that do something to you at 36 years old that caused you to have to really get over a hump to be able to maintain health and stability?
Oh, yeah, to forgive once again. You know, forgiveness is a long-term project.
Yeah, it is.
It's not a one and done.
Yeah.
You choose to do it over and over again. And I can tell you exactly where I was laying when I read the email from a family member that said, listen, because I knew there was something else that people didn't want to tell me. They kept saying, you know, don't you know enough? Isn't it just better that you leave some things alone? And I said, no, this is my life. This is God's story. I need to know, as hard as it may be. And so part of me was expecting some really big secret, but I can tell you exactly where I was laying when I read the email and how broken I felt. Not that it was surprising to me, because abortion has done terrible things in our world. To people.
Yes. Yeah.
So that part didn't surprise me, but yeah, it rips your heart out to know that somebody who I wanted to believe had good intentions with that abortion, not understanding the depths of what they were doing. You know, I wanted to believe all along that my grandparents just didn't know
any better.
Right.
Yeah.
And then to find that out, yeah, that changed my world. But I can tell you, I picked myself up off that bed after I read that email and went to church, and that was the best thing for me to do that day.
So you had a community of people around you that could just love you through it. Even if they didn't know that was exactly what they were doing. They didn't know all the details, but you just had a community around you.
Yeah. And I like to think that God has unfolded every little piece in my life when he knows that I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
I think if I would have heard that at the age of 14, I would have been a mess.
Okay. So let's go back to these days now in the hospital that you've got. Your grandmother wants you to be left for dead, but what kept that from happening? What unfolded in the next week or two or month?
You know, sadly, I know that children like me were actually left in a utility closet there at that hospital to die. I've met nurses who did that to children like me who lived.
Really?
My medical records do reflect that, you know, it won't say that I was left to die, but within about 5 minutes, I was actually in worse shape than when I was first delivered. And the stories that have been told over the years is that, yes, I was left for a period of time. And somehow there were two nurses on staff who found out about that secret abortion and the little girl who lived, and they fought against my own grandmother for medical care to be provided to me. And that medical care obviously sustained my life.
You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of the Hebrew midwives that were supposed to be annihilating all these babies that were born into the time of Moses in Egypt. Do you all remember this? And yet they chose to save these babies, even if it was going to cost them their lives. They chose to save those babies, and they were just placed in that position for such a time as this to maintain those babies' lives. And you had these two women, these two nurses that are like angels from heaven that see this little life and place value on your life.
And were willing to put their own careers on the line for me.
And here you sit today.
And I am utterly grateful to them.
And so were you adopted then from the hospital, straight from the hospital?
Okay. I was. I stayed in the hospital. I was transferred to another hospital to receive further care. The doctors made it clear they didn't think I was going to live for very long.
Really?
If I continued to live, they thought I was going to suffer from major disabilities throughout my life. I suffered from seizures for an extended period of time. I required multiple blood transfusions, suffered from severe respiratory and liver problems. But my mom and dad, my adoptive parents, didn't hesitate for a second to open their hearts to me when they received that call from social services about the little girl who had survived an abortion and was fighting for her life.
How old were you?
The first time they met me, I was still very young. I was about a month old the first time they met me. And I love when my parents tell the story of how the first time they met me, I was still lying in an incubator full of tubes and wires. And that first time they laid eyes on me, they fell in love with me. And I know they fell in love with me. And that's what I fight for in our world. I want every child to have somebody fall in love with them the way my parents fell in love with me.
Yeah. There was this movie that was out several years ago, and it really was the story of, I think it was called October Baby. And it's the story of a girl who really, you can see the effects of the failed abortion in her life now as a teenager. And are you dealing with now at 38 years old, physical disability or handicap or difficulty because of the failed abortion?
Not physical. I am unscathed. Praise God.
Really?
Praise
Beautiful.
God.
Amen.
Miracles absolutely do exist. Yeah. I received a clean bill of health by the time I was about five.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great.
Pretty amazing. But yeah. Internally, yes, absolutely, there are scars. Mm-hmm. Emotionally, mentally, spiritually, yes, there are scars. But I think those scars serve an important purpose.
Have you ever wondered why you did not die in that closet? And why the Lord would have spared, of all those babies in there, His will, for whatever reason, was that this baby be the one that is spared from that closet?
I get really teary because it's an incredibly humbling thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if everybody realizes we've lost 57 million children to abortion since it was legalized in our country. And I live every day of my life knowing I was supposed to be one of them.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any more humbling than that.
Yeah.
So, yes, I have spent years of my life questioning God and saying, why me? What is so special about me? I am no different than any one of those other 57 million children. I think what is different is that there were people that day who were willing to fight for me. And they were willing to say, yes, Lord, we will do whatever it takes to save this girl. And it put in, you talk about trajectory, right? It put into a chain of events that continued to allow God's purpose and plan to unfold over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of why I'm here, because people loved on me and fought for me.
Yeah.
But I have not questioned for a second that God has a plan for me.
57 million babies. And millions more who need somebody to fight for them.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Priscilla, and I wanted to take an opportunity to invite you personally to join me for a 7-session Bible study on the armor of God. We'll dive deeply into what it means to be equipped to stand firm against the schemes of the enemy. He is very real, and he has been so strategic and targeted in his attacks against us. Why shouldn't we be equally strategic and targeted in standing firm against him? And you and I have an opportunity to suit up, to put on some armor that works, and to go to battle and to see victory declared in our lives and in the lives of those people that we love.
This Bible study will be one that will change our lives forever and will help us to walk in victory. So plan to join me, won't you? The Armor of God.
I am glad you're back, having a very interesting and moving conversation with you, Melissa, about really your life story. It's just the story of your life. It's a beautiful tapestry of all these intricate and interesting events that have brought you to this sofa right now and to this place in your life. And you mentioned that it was around 5 years old that you kind of got a clean bill of health. Were the doctors all surprised by that because they just expected you not to be able to flourish well in life?
Yeah, I think they continue to be mystified by people like me who survive abortions. I know of 206 other people like me. In reality, there are many, many more than that. I believe that.
Yeah.
But there's just not a lot that's known about us. So as the years have gone on, we've all kind of held our breath and went, maybe this is the year something's going to happen,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I'm still doing well today.
That's good. That's good. Do you worry about that? Do you wonder if the effects of that are ever going to catch up with you one day? Or is that something you've put out of your mind?
I've put it out of my mind now. You know, I was 14 when I found out that I survived the abortion.
I was going to ask you that.
Okay. I grew up knowing I was adopted. My parents actually kept the secret of my survival from me because they simply wanted me to live my life knowing that my birth parents loved me. Mm-hmm. Adoption was normal in my family. My parents adopted my older sister from another family, and then they adopted me. And then after 15 years of infertility, they had my little brother.
Oh, my goodness.
We couldn't understand why they did that, my sister and I.
I can tell you how it happened.
Yeah, we knew how it might happen. What we couldn't understand was why would you, right?
Yes, that's right.
When you could just adopt again. That's what we were expecting. So, you know, I grew up feeling very blessed, knowing that my mom and dad, my adoptive parents loved me, but that my birth parents loved me too.
And you know, I want to know, did you ever know your mom? Your biological mom, biological dad, did you or do you know them, who they are? Do you have a relationship with them?
God sent me out on a journey to find them.
Okay.
I started looking for them when I was 19. So found out at 14 that I survived an abortion. Started looking for them when I was 19 because God really put it on me to offer them love and forgiveness. You know, that love and forgiveness that I felt for them, I needed to tell them. And so I started looking when I was 19, didn't find them until I was 30. I loved when we talk about wilderness and desert, though that was my desert.
Yeah, it's a long time.
It is a long time. Yeah. And I had to really trust.
Actively looking.
Oh, absolutely. I'm good at the search. If anybody wants help, I am good at this. Don't let that 10 years of searching fool you.
Yeah.
It wasn't God's time.
Yeah.
But it became God's time. And I had to learn to trust in His will completely.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2007, I found them.
Okay. What was that like? Tell us about that.
Well, it was very unexpected how I found them. During those 10 years, I tried to find my medical records because even though I have a master's degree in social work, carved out a career, loved what I did, God was always saying, I have more for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not my plan for you, Melissa, to sit in an office. You will go and you will tell my story. Mm-hmm. And I knew if I went and told the world, people would say, no, this can't be true. And so I searched for my medical records during those 10 years. And after years of being told no, 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 finally in 2007, I got them. And people can see them on my website. I showed them recently to Congress. And then they say things like a saline infusion for an abortion was done, but was unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm.
As hard as it was to read those things, I ultimately found great joy because in them, they forgot to black out my birth parents' names. After 10 years of searching for them, God committed the greatest HIPAA violation ever. Right? I choose to call that divine intervention.
Yeah, it's great.
But when I found them, I started searching that same night, and I learned that I was living in the very same city.
You're kidding.
Yeah, hold on. Hold on to your seat. I was living in the very same city as my biological father.
Really?
I didn't grow up there. I moved there to finish my master's degree. Knowing that that's where my birth mother's abortion had taken place, but never thinking 30 years later, right?
Yeah.
He was there. And there he was. I've never actually been able to meet him because I sent him a letter not long after that, sent it to his office, trying to protect him a little bit. And he passed away about 6 months after I sent it. And I found out because I Googled his name one night on the internet and found his obituary. And that was really hard to trust in God's will.
Yeah.
You know, I often say it's easy to believe in God's will when things happen the way we plan.
And it's a whole other thing. You're just celebrating God's will.
Exactly.
But when it looks different than what you expected or the fairy tale you had drawn out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in terms of my birth mother, I started looking for her back in 2007 also. Couldn't find her. But I found my grandparents. You know, that grandmother.
I was going to ask you about those grandparents.
I sent them a letter back then, not knowing the role my grandmother played. And I'm so thankful that they responded to my letter. My grandfather actually replied and admitted to the abortion taking place and told me some things about my biological family. Yeah, exchanged pictures. And that was the last time I heard from them. And, you know, I truly have trusted that if God wanted me to find my birth mother, if it was his will, it would happen. And in 2013, one of her cousins contacted me. That's how I found out the role my grandmother played in everything taking place. And my cousin put me in contact with my two half-sisters from that side of my family. We haven't met yet, but we communicate quite frequently. And then my cousin facilitated communication between my birth mother and myself also.
Okay. And?
And I know the lingering question, right? You should probably hold on to your seat.
Okay.
It gets a little more wild from here. The greatest secret about my life that even my adoptive parents didn't know is that my birth mom spent over 30 years of her life believing that I had died that day at the hospital.
Really?
I never saw that coming. I mean, my life is full of so many moments where I go, never saw that coming. In both good ways and bad ways. And, you know, I've come to respect that this is God's story of redemption. And he is writing a story of redemption in everyone's lives. The difference is we just don't always want to live out the story that he's writing. I would choose to live out this story for my biological mother over and over and over again because she suffered. Over those 30 years,
she's
so much
her
regret.
Baby is
absolutely
dead.
The very first specific email she sent to me was on my 37th birthday, and the very first thing she said was, 37 years ago today, I was robbed of you. And she went on and she said, my greatest regret in life is that I didn't run away from my family to protect you. Every woman deserves better than that. Every woman deserves better than that. And so she struggled initially when I said, I love you and I have forgiven you. And she was saying, no, you can't love me. And how can you forgive us when you now know this whole story, how my family was responsible for so much? And it hurt me that she questioned it. But I understand that she wasn't loved the way that I have been. And now she accepts it. You know, she is starting to find joy and talk about me and open up about things.
Have you met face to face?
We haven't yet.
You haven't yet. And how long has this been that you've been communicating?
Almost 3 years now.
What's the reason why you haven't decided to meet?
I think we're both sitting on the fence, maybe waiting for the other one to say, are you ready?
Yeah.
And, you know, I had another baby in the midst of that. I have a 7-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old, and my 1-year-old was born with a lot of health issues. And so that kind of complicated things, and I'm grateful that my
birth... You live in different states, your mother and you? Are you close or are you far?
I don't ever share how close we are.
Okay, well, you know, because I'll pick up the phone and facilitate it for you.
I don't doubt that.
We want to get y'all together.
We'll just say we are closer than what any of us ever planned.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And do you think that... when you look at the grand scope of your life, and now you look at you're married, doctors didn't think you'd be alive, much less being able to function healthfully and wholly in so many ways. So you're married, you have two children, you have your master's degree. Here you are sitting, talking, helping other people to realize that there's a baby in there. There's a living being in there. And so when you look at your life and you look at all that the Lord has allowed, how do you... explain how a woman like you can find the beauty out of the ashes? How do you describe to others how, no matter where you've started, no matter where you've come from, no matter what has framed your life thus far, there is something beyond your wildest imagination that God can still do in and through you?
One of my favorite quotes, and I was writing it out today, your current circumstances are a part of the redemption story that God is writing.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're in the midst of pain and suffering. We can't see outside of it. Mm-hmm. We can't see the purpose through the pain.
Yeah.
But God is always still writing the story.
He is still writing the story. And he's still writing your story.
Mm-hmm.
You got a great story right now. You have these two sweet little girls, no telling what the Lord has planned for them. And, you know, that's what's so interesting to me. When I see someone, you know, even in all of our lives where we realized 30 years ago mm-hmm. what the enemy would try to do to cut us off at the pass way down there. But then you see not only how the Lord brings that person out, but then the children that they have. And also how his effects now aren't going to reach this generation or the next generation. It's just a miracle, not just for you. It's a miracle for your children and your grandchildren and all that God has planned for you in your life.
Yeah, it's a legacy of life.
It's a legacy of life. And now you've connected with these 206 other survivors of abortion. What is your goal in that connection with them?
I founded the Abortion Survivors Network because I realized I'm not the only one. And mm-hmm. most survivors think they're alone.
Yeah.
And so if people go visit theabortionsurvivors.com, they can come face to face with other people like me. So our purpose is twofold, to educate the world about failed abortions, the consequences of abortion, and that children like me live, and to let other survivors know they're not alone and connect them with other people.
Yeah, very, very important story. I'm so glad that you've shared it. And listen, this really is just part one of the conversation that we are having. We're going to add another voice to the conversation in just a few moments when we come back for part two. Well, actually, you'll have to stay tuned for part two because we're going to keep going with what we've been talking about. But I want to just ask you all to help me to thank Melissa for being here, for telling her story.
Thank you so much.